Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
You are listening to the Moncrief Show on Newstalk. 087 1400 106 is our WhatsApp number, and our email address is afternoon@newstalk.com. It is time for Movies and Booze. We're joined in the studio by Fionnuala Jones, Zara Hederman and James Donnelly. Good afternoon to you all.
How are you? Guys.
So Zara, worst film of the year. I'm really looking forward to hearing about this one.
Yeah. Still recovering from it, I think. And I think my
this
own
is Ice Cream Man.
Yeah. Divisive Eli Roth's latest horror film, child fronted slasher. I would say the best thing about it is it's 86 minutes long.
Okay.
So it's short, gets in and out. It's weirdly as well, like when I was watching it, people were very anxious about this being really gruesome because that's his whole thing with like Hostel and stuff like that. I don't want to sound weird by saying the kills were actually quite funny because of how comically badly they were executed. And also there is, as we'll get into a little bit later, a bit of generative AI used in there, which also kind of makes it all just look a bit terrible.
Yeah. Oh, God. Right.
And then
okay.
We have Lady on the other end. Brilliant mockumentary.
Oh, right.
Really,
right.
Really good. Yeah. Great time at the cinema. This opened next week. So it's got Sian Clifford, who people might know as the sister from Fleabag. She is basically playing, I think as she calls herself, like aristocracy's answer to the Kardashians. So a film crew come to her like massive manner to make a film better.
Okay, that sounds more promising. Right, so, and James, what are the tell us about the two beers we're going to be sipping in a wee while.
We've gone for one, which is something everybody will be familiar with, which is an IPA from Dopbrew. And then the second one I've chosen is a Goes, which is a style from Germany, brewed by Kinnegar up in Donegal.
Okay, Goes, what kind of style is that?
So it comes from Leipzig in Germany, where they used to brew with the water from the river Goes, which flows through a particularly mineral dense area. So it leads to a sort of salty character on the finish of the beer. But then they would also usually co-ferment with a little bit of bacteria. So you get this sort of
delicious.
Yeah, you get this light, citrusy, fun, salty, savory style of beer.
So is it a class of a wheat beer? Or
yeah, they would use quite a lot of malted and unmalted wheat.
Right. Okay.
It. Yeah.
But a bit of bacteria thrown in.
Just for a bit of fun.
See, you should never use the word bacteria when you're marketing the beer, I think. It's just my opinion. Fionnuala, they're doing it again. They're forcing Spider-Man on people when really they don't need to.
Well, yeah, they certainly don't because it's breaking like box office records all across the board. They are playing ads for the new Spider-Man film in BMW cars. And I'll tell you what, the BMW owners, they are certainly not happy about this. They are very, very annoyed. Basically, this promotion is running through until like August 10th. I don't know if it's happening over here. Maybe it's just a thing in the States and it seems to be some of the kind of newer models. But basically, all these BMW owners have gone to Reddit to say that they're being spammed with this ad on their like, again, I'm not super familiar with the interior of BMWs or newer cars that have the screens or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So it must be something that I think originally it was just kind of like a banner, we'll say. So this banner comes up on the dashboard screen being like, Spider-Man, brand new day, it's Spider-Man again, woo! Like, whatever.
Yeah.
And apparently, like, you have to actually click into it for the video to play. But some people are taking the internet to say the video is just playing like itself and like this is really irritating. Mm. So it's kind of reminiscent of when YouTube put all the albums on the iPhones and everyone was like, where is the edge? I want to talk to him. Get this off now. People are very annoyed. People are very, very annoyed. BMW have talked about this being like a special surprise for its drivers.
It's an advert, isn't it?
It's an advert. Yeah, yeah. But it's just kind of like crazy. Again, like the BMW owners on Reddit are saying that they've been kind of like, quote, slowly trying to normalize displaying ads. And it kind of started with these like celebratory videos, but now it's become like kind of third party ads and products and stuff, which you get like when you're putting it like that, it is a bit crazy that you're like, you're coming inside my car and telling me like, no, silence brand. Like I'm dealing, you know what I mean? Like it's a bit.
Yeah. And
nuts.
But I thought it's dangerous as well. If you're in your Beamer and you're trying to get directions to Newtown Mount Kennedy and you have to deal with Spider-Man swinging through the middle of the direction.
Thing. You're not supposed to be like distracted by anything visual on the screen because it's so dangerous.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Nuts altogether.
Anyway, Tom Holland, you will pay for your crimes.
Yeah, but BMW haven't said sorry or anything. They're going, great.
No, they haven't. At the time of speaking to you right now, I don't think they've said anything else yet. As I said, they were just happy with their, quote, special surprise for drivers. So.
Even in your, yeah, see, everywhere you go soon, eventually someone, everything will be selling you something.
And everything will be monetized, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And Sam Neill's last film.
Yes. Well, we think, anyway, we're like pretty sure, the role is unconfirmed, but the last thing that he worked on that he wrapped in April was The Legend of Zelda adaptation, which I'm very excited about. As we said, don't really know his role and they're keeping the plot like very firmly under wraps. But we did have a couple of other casting additions as well as Sam Neill. We've got Dickon Lochman, who people will know as Gemma from Severance. She's going to be playing Impa, who is Zelda's like helper. I'm going to be honest, I've played some of the Zelda games and I found some of them too scary, so I'm not super familiar with her character. The pictures I've seen, the casting, incredible. We've also got Ivan Strakovsky, who people will know from The Handmaid's Tale. And then we also have, obviously, those newcomers as Zelda and Link themselves. Benjamin Evan Ainsworth is Zelda. And yeah, it's going to be very exciting. This is coming out May 27th. 2027. We also have Uli Lactukefe as Ganondorf, who's like the big scary villain. People might know him from Young Rock, which was the prequel series. I don't know if you can have a prequel series about your life, but it was like a fictionalized version of The Rock, Dwayne The Rock Johnson's life. So I was like, he's coming for The Rock's jobs, I think. Imagine playing The Rock and now you're just stealing all these gigs that he was touted for. Because Ganondorf is like big, scary, huge
muscly
fella, basically, who wants to take the Triforce and, you know, get rid of Zelda, essentially. So,
well, of course.
Yeah.
But they haven't said what Sam Neill's actual role is in
And, like,
though.
Again, my knowledge of the Zelda universe is limited. But I was trying to think of characters. I'm not 100% sure. He could also be a new character, because I think they were saying Ivan Strakovsky's role is she's playing, like, a queen character. So.
Yeah, but they've finished all the photography, so there's not going to be some weirdy kind of, you know, we had to AI the last bit of Sam's performance.
Thank God. No, he had wrapped in April. So,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It'll
okay. That'll be kind of sad for people.
Yeah.
Really well. Right. Our first beer.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Tell us about it.
So style is Goes, which originates in Germany, in Leipzig. This one is brewed by Kinnegar up in Donegal. They've done a little bit of a spin on it. As I said before, usually there'd be a little bit of co-fermentation with bacteria. What they've done here is they've taken a yogurt culture from nomadic dairies who are their neighbors up there, if you've ever had their yogurts. They've added some lemon zest, some thyme, and then some pink peppercorn. Barley and wheat used. The wheat is mostly for texture. It sort of adds protein, so you get mouthfeel. It feels bigger. But then the mixture of the fruit and the acidity from the bacteria kind of just gives you this clean, tangy, savory, salty interplay
kind
of stuff.
Yeah.
And then again, the salt on the finish is like very sort of mineral, almost like if you've had a Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand or something like that, or a Sancerre from the Loire Valley, you get that really salty, mouth-watering kind of finish on it. But yeah, it's something I think more people should be aware of. Not everything should be just lager and IPA. There's so much out there and so many smaller breweries that are really brewing interesting things.
But technically, what would you call this beer?
So the style is called a Goes.
Yeah.
But
that's a specific style of its own.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it comes from the River Goes, which flows through Leipzig.
But if they can't get any water from the River Goes in Kinnegar,
They're using local sea salt.
Okay.
So they will add that.
Yeah.
And that's where you get the salty umami kind of character from.
Right. And is the River Goes then, is it the water there is salty?
Yeah. So as it makes its way down through the mountain, it flows over certain minerals and rocks that sort of historically would have infused the water with a lot of calcium and sodium and that kind of thing, unbeknownst to the brewers at the time. But that's what gave the beer its sort of characteristic thing that people then really started to enjoy.
Right.
It's not super common now, unless you're in Germany itself, but every now and then craft brewers will do a spin on it.
Yeah.
This one, with the addition of lemon, thyme and peppercorn, that would be a little bit different, but that's just a sort of build complexity and I suppose put a fun sort of summary spin on it.
Yeah.
But overall, It's still quite classic, but if you were going to go stylistically by the book, this would be called Fruited Goes rather than just Goes.
Yeah.
Okay. It's very nice though, I must say. Yeah. Right, so... should we do the worst film of the year?
Come on, let's get it out of the way.
Yeah, okay. All right. Ice Cream Man coming up after this.
You guys see that weird Ice Cream Man today?
What do you mean weird?
I don't know. He just like kept popping up like he was following me or something.
Like to kidnap you?
I feel sorry for whoever kidnaps Jared.
Elizabeth, please.
I take it back. He'd make an excellent kidnap victim.
That's not good either, but at least it's positive.
Wait, how is he strange?
Just this song he was playing, I guess. I don't know. Weird.
There you go. That was Ice Cream Man there. Is it in cinemas already?
Today, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Right. So, explain the inciting incident or what, you know, kind of launches all the action, so to speak.
So as we heard from that table read-esque dialogue from Eli Roth, the director himself, Charlie Zeltzer plays Jared, who's like this 12-year-old kid. We meet them at this like baseball game, and all the kids in this film are so horrible to each other and just like cursing like sailors. Like, it's kind of astonishing. So they finish their baseball game, and this ice cream man comes driving in his like old kind of style ice cream truck. He looks like he's been transported from the 1950s. Actually, Fionnuala, you would love this. He kind of looks like someone who is in Panic at the Disco.
Oh, yeah. That's my type.
Yeah. Exactly. The best part probably about the direction and like storytelling device of this film is that the ice cream man doesn't say a word, which always kind of makes someone creepy.
Okay.
So all of the kids eat ice cream from this truck, as you would imagine, like in a hot, and it's also set in like the most like pristine suburb of all time. Everyone except Jared eats the ice cream. And even as they're doing this, which I found quite strange, like he's looking around at all his friends eating ice cream as if they're weird. And he's like, oh, they shouldn't be eating the ice cream. And the reason why he doesn't eat it is because he's lactose intolerant.
Okay.
Yeah. So he dodges a bullet there by avoiding the ice cream. So then...
Does he know he's lactose intolerant? Or is that just a lucky guess on his part?
No, he knows. Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, he... probably historically has had some ice cream and not gone well for him. It doesn't go well for the children who do eat the ice cream either, because during the night they all wake up, they stand by like their parents' beds and just start like decapitating them with saws, making their parents...
You see, that's the sugar come down.
Exactly. To me, reminded me of, you know, too many loop-de-loops when I was a kid. But they just go on this rampage where there's all these kind of like very cartoonish kills. And then the next day, Jared goes to school, but the classrooms are empty. All the teachers are a bit like, where is everyone? But they just think it's, you know, end of school term. They're all just Mitching and all that kind of stuff. They then arrive to the school, all the children, like Night of the Living Dead. So Eli Roth is always kind of going on that he's like a student of horror. And like it shows in this where he's like outwardly doing like Night of the Living Dead. As I said, he's doing like The Birds at one point.
Oh.
Yeah. And then it really feels like, because this is child fronted, where they're doing all the kind of madness of the killing, it seems like he saw the success of Weapons and was like, I kind of want a piece of this action.
Mm.
But there is little to no plot. Like, it's all just spectacle of these like kills. When we do get some plot, which is the lore of the ice cream man and why he is doing this, when I say the collective cinema screen, you could feel the jaws hitting the floor. Like, I thought I'd had some of the ice cream man's ice cream myself. I was so shocked at where they bring this.
Yeah.
So basically, without giving too many spoilers, like the ice cream man came to this town 50 years ago. He was wrongfully accused of a crime that happened in the town, and that involved, let's say, a lawyer and a priest. And then the ice cream man goes to jail, perishes, and introduced me to a new term of a necromancer.
Oh.
Yeah. which is basically like a sorcerer who can like reanimate dead bodies.
Yeah.
And we learn that Jared and two of his friends who also didn't eat the ice cream, they go on a mission along with his elder sister, Lizzie, to try and stop the ice cream man. They're also trying to get in touch with their parents the whole while. They're having a struggle with that. And it turns out that the ice cream man's revenge that he wanted to enact on this town was actually a little bit more specific.
Right. Yes. Okay. And that's probably the because he's given ice cream to all these kids. Are these kids then having murdered their parents? Are they running around the town kind of killing everyone they can?
Every adult.
Yeah.
When teenagers have the ice cream, they just become paralyzed. So,
okay.
Yeah, it's purely adults. Teachers aren't safe. Policemen aren't safe. Parents aren't safe. It's just absolute chaos. And it really loses its charm after the first, the inciting night of all the murders. It just kind of gets a bit gratuitous.
Loses its charm. So there's a charming period while they're all these 12-year-olds are killing their parents.
Initially, the kid who plays Jared, Charlie Zeltzer, he's kind of compelling.
Yeah.
He's sweet. Yeah. And I think because of that thing of the kids swearing, there's a bit of an adult nature to them and how they react to things, which was initially kind of funny. But while watching it, it is so jarring seeing just how much AI is used across the film. There's one scene, the clip that we heard there, I was completely distracted by a tomato ketchup bottle on the table because the label is so blatantly AI. All the posters in the school are AI. There's cars on fire that's clearly AI. And Eli Roth, who I believe has a background in animation, he said that the ice cream man has this promo video, I guess you could call it, where it's kind of in that Fleischer studio style of the old Mickey Mouse. He said that with a team of animation workers that he drew those animations, and then recently at the start of this week he was like, oops, I misspoke. And actually, we did use some AI in some scenes because I was just excited to see technology and creativity merge together.
Yeah, blah, blah. So I lied in the previous thing. So if these kids are going around killing people and they're only 12, does that mean that, the cops or whatever might be shooting 12-year-olds?
They don't get a chance.
Okay. Yeah.
These kids are sneaky. They're on top of schools with bricks.
Yeah.
They're sawing their teachers' heads, top of the heads off, scooping it out like ice cream. They're quick. They're agile.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. Who the hell is this aimed at, really?
I was trying to think about this and maybe 14, 15-year-olds going to the cinema during summer holidays.
Would they?
For shock value.
Shock value.
Yeah.
Everyone, when we all came out of the screen, we were that was horrific.
What's the cert on it, do you know?
I actually don't know. I would imagine 15, though. Yeah, I would have to
at least 15.
But if if Eli Roth keeps making this crap, there must be an audience for it who like that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, this film is the first of his The Horror Section Media Company. So I guess now that he has that, there's little kind of authorities to be no, please stop making these. And I think he thinks they're very good.
Presumably he would, but he's getting a distribution deal and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, he's also putting himself in the films, but it's just you kind of wonder how much thread is left for his career because people don't typically like his films.
Yeah,
I think there was a bit of his Thanksgiving film from a couple of years ago that was commercially successful, but he's hit and miss.
Yeah, but commercially successful is probably all he cares about. Or does he think of himself as an auteur?
Well, getting the birds reference in there in the Fleischer Studios, it's very surface level of this is good. It doesn't take much to recognise those tropes.
Yeah. Right, well, there you go. But you reckon it's the worst film of the year?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you'd be confident to say it probably will go on to win the title outright by the time you reached November.
It'll sweep up at the Razzies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. Right. Okay. That's Ice Cream Man. Right. They're going to do an X-Men reboot. Why?
Why not, I suppose? I mean, why not? They've been teasing this since Deadpool and Wolverine, who could forget the cinematic classic. I think there is something that basically whoever owns the property now. Like, it's moved over. So, like, I think Marvel can do more with it. I might have who actually owns it wrong. But, like, basically, they've been kind of eyeing this up for a while, and it's just been kind of logistics and stuff like that. But they've been kind of, like, softly teasing it, as I said, with Deadpool and Wolverine. No spoilers. There might also be some inferences to it in the new Spider-Man movie, but I'll leave it at that. But basically, in terms of other casting that's come out now, they're looking at Kit Connor for Cyclops. People know Kit Connor from Warfare, probably most famously though for Heartstopper, the Alice Osman adaptation on Netflix, of the two gay teenagers who fall in love, and it's all incredibly sweet. He's circling that role. They're also looking at, I'm not sure if this is confirmed, but they're looking at Samara Weaving, who people know from the Ready or Not franchise, or Neighbours, that's how I remember her, also for looking incredibly similar to Margot Robbie. She is being eyed for the role of Emma Frost. And then we also have Indy Navarrete, who was obviously the breakout star of Obsession. Apparently she's met the head honchos and has said that she would like to play Mystique, but that's obviously not a confirmation or anything. She's just kind of throwing her hat into the ring. So this is coming down the tracks at some stage. They are going to do it whether we want it or not, so just prepare yourselves.
Yeah, but will it be like, have they given any indication that, is it the same thing? Or is it an origin story that we've seen already? Or, like, or are they pretending, oh yeah, they're totally the same people from the other films?
I'm not super familiar with that. I would imagine because, like, you're talking about, like, a much younger cast. Like, yeah. Kit Connor is definitely younger than me. I think maybe mid-20s. So, like, are you going younger again then?
Oh, you are at that depressing stage of life.
Yeah. So are they going, and I'm going to be honest, it's ages since I've seen First Class. The kind of last reboot with James Marsden and Michael Fassbender and all of them. I'm not really sure what it, I feel like that was the start of them, and it was like, we're mutants, what are we going to do? Let's work it out together in mutant boot camp or whatever. Like, I don't know, is this the same thing? I don't really know, but yeah.
I often wonder if I know they're young and they're only starting out, and so you can't really say no to it. But you can't go into this and think, oh well, I'm going to give my, you know, my different interpretation of being Cyclops, because you won't really, will you?
I mean, you can try, I suppose. Does it depend on the material? Does it again go back to what kind of angle are we taking on it? I don't really know. But again, it is more comes down to, you're talking about, like, well, one, the money, and two, the visibility to be attached to a project like this is, like, especially Kit Connor's in probably a weird, because obviously Heartstopper just finished. I know I just said he was in Warzone. I don't know anyone that watched that. I'm sure loads of men did and thought it was great. I don't know, whatever. Don't really remember it kind of making any huge commercial or critical waves, but that property was obviously huge and he'll obviously be attached to it forevermore. This is kind of like the best, well, I say best in inverted commas, but like, it's the biggest kind of segue you can make to be like, I want to be a leading man and this is what I can do, and I can also do this, you know?
Yeah.
Does anyone ever get stuck in the Marvel Universe in that they can leave it and go and do, you know, play humans again?
Does anyone ever get stuck in the Marvel Universe?
Because most of them haven't, as far as off the top of my head. I think most of them,
in terms of, like, they've been able to parlay and go back and do like cool, again, quote unquote things. That's a great question. I mean, Chris Evans was Captain America and he went away and did like Materialists and other bits, but like to any huge effect. Scarlett Johansson, but like, you could argue that she had her own career, like she had the
before
kind of
that,
cool stuff either side, and then was like, I'm Black Widow, and then was like, no, I'm going to do other stuff now, you know, that way. That's a good question. I feel like I'm not familiar enough with,
and it's just that if you're, because say in the instance Scarlett Johansson had a career beforehand, so she was known as an actor rather than, if some of these, you know, kids, you know, they're not much older than kids, like, you know, and this is the first role the public in general sees them, then forevermore they're stuck as an X-Man.
Including
the X-Women.
I was going to say Pedro Pascal, but again, that's probably not a good example because he did have a very long career in front of it as, like, character actor.
And has also been able to, like, make people not realise or forget that he was part of the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
Because he does so much.
Well, he's going to be in that new Avengers, whatever, this time it's personal, so we'll all be reminded again, you know? Whatever it's called, I don't know. Don't text in, I don't care.
Someone says, Roth's horror section is a horror show, says John in Limerick. That's one of his previous films, is it?
No, it's a media company that he has just set up.
Oh, right. Okay,
so it's just set up, and Ice Cream Man was the first project that he has put this film out on. Now, he could have had an anthology series as well beforehand called the same thing.
But, ah, right. Yeah. Ruri says, in fairness, less spoilers in this review than the trailer I saw in cinema a few weeks back. Looks absolutely chronic. How does Roth get money for this crap? Like Green Inferno, kills so amateur hour, it isn't believable. Shame.
Yeah.
How does he get money? Because presumably he has to go to investors. They go, yeah.
I would say he's well connected. Like, he's...
You're saying there's mafia money in these in this movie.
I mean, I don't want to say implying. That. I don't want to
allegedly.
Stick allegedly in front of yeah.
Right, so I'm actually interested in this. This is a film called Wicker.
Yes.
And it is based on a story. And what's the plot of that story?
Okay, so I think this is from Black Bear and it's based on a short story by Ursula Willis Jones. Not sure if we're related, but would like to get in touch if we are, Ursula. The short story is called The Wicker Husband. And basically this adaptation follows Olivia Colman, who's a fisherwoman, right?
Okay.
And she commissions the local basket maker, who's played by Peter Dinklage, to weave her a husband, who is played by Alexander Skarsgård, because I think he says, I'm not playing something unless they're an absolute freak, which I appreciate. But basically, when this wicker man comes to life and he ends up being like really sexy, basically this village is totally like disrupted because everyone gets really jealous and the whole place is thrown into chaos and everyone's like fighting for this wicker basket man, essentially, which has led to some of the most deranged reactions I've ever seen on like, we need Heather Drivery back because this is what we're resorting to, where people are like genuinely fancying men made of wicker. Like there are people on like the bar is so low for men that we're romanticising baskets, you know yeah. what I mean? Yeah. Like, and people are in depth as to how, like, and again, I'm aware we're pre-watershed, but people are trying to figure out, like, logistically, how would it work? And then they're also okay. saying, look, if I was in Olivia Colman's position, it wouldn't matter. Like, I love him. My really? Man, my man, my yeah. man. Okay. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah.
Now, have you seen pictures of Peter Sarsgaard as the wicker?
Alexander Sarsgaard, yeah.
Look, does he, no, but does he look like he's made of wicker?
Or oh,
does
he look no, like... No, Sean, like, he's no. fully, like, he's a it's a basket man. Like, it's like Scarecrow, it's Wizard of Oz Scarecrow-esque, but the whole thing is,
handsome.
Oh, maybe that's where it started, there yeah. you go. I was more of a Tin Man girl myself, but anyway, this it's just like the trailer, or one of the trailers I think has gotten 11 million views, and it's just like when I say this has been my entire feed all week, I would recommend going seeing the trailer. It's out October 30th, but this is what I'm saying, it's like we can't give out about the reboots without supporting original ideas
yeah,
in which
absolutely.
What if
yeah.
Olivia Colman jumped a man made of wicker, do you know?
Love it.
We absolutely support original stories.
I'm yeah. into it.
And does Skarsgård look, you know, is he hot as a wicker man? I assume he must
he's
be.
He's pretty beefy, like. They made yeah. him like a very, I don't know, like societally, conventionally attractive wicker man, basket man, you know?
Yeah.
Do the pieces of wicker like make out abs?
Yeah.
Does he have definition?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He has like a defined chest. There's some kind of like, there's great use of sound direction and sound design here in terms of how he moves, you know? Like it's very much tapping into this whole thing of, you know, there's a genre of book that the predominantly women, I don't mean to generalize, but I would think that's fair, where it's like, I love my wolf husband or this wolf, I want to be with him, but I can't be with him because I'm
he's
a fairy or something. And yeah, he's a wolf, you know? So I think it's kind of tapping into that as well.
Oh,
you know?
It's a romanticy kind of,
oh well yeah like bucket, because yeah. she's but you know it's like she lives this lonely life and then it's like ah look just make me a husband out of wicker because like I am a bit lonely and then it actually turns
we've
out he is
there.
The perfect man we've yeah. all been there you know
absolutely and can you see through the wicker or is it tightly woven
it's pretty
wicker?
Tightly woven
and is he wearing clothes
no not in all the pictures I've seen
oh
know?
Right okay
you know
okay
can he eat
can he eat
he
that's a great
for dinner.
Question yeah. yeah oh yeah I can't take yeah. her for dinner he doesn't, yeah. she doesn't need to go for dinner that's not what she's after
yeah
we only want one thing
yeah,
and it's wicker basket men
yeah hashtag wicker Mickey will the Warner Brothers Paramount merger affect TV channels from buying shows and films made by them in the future Brian wants to know yes you're starting for 10
I'm gonna say yes
yeah and okay well done.
Yeah.
So yes is the answer Brian
I'm going to be honest I saw all those stories in the news today and I said I'd rather talk about the Whisker Basket Man
yeah.
so I'm really sorry to that yeah. texter but I'll have more information for you next week
does your guest fancy the Tin Man in the unpost Christmas ad because he's a looker especially yeah. when he puts his the heart card into his chest
yeah and you know what he's been endearing as well
yeah he
why
is.
Has this conversation gone here now I'm like why have we done this
yeah
yeah
there you go
yeah
I was just you know, the straw scarecrow in yeah. Wizard of Oz. He, as a child, I did kind of, I was endeared by him.
Yeah.
Endeared.
Endeared.
But they
endeared.
Didn't like stir feelings you didn't quite understand at the time.
Yeah, I really wanted him and Dorothy to get together.
Right, okay. Yeah,
I feel bad that this is your first show.
We won't ask James which childhood figure excited him beyond imagine. You are listening to the Moncrief Show and you stop. We're going to take a break.
So the next one I've gone for is from Dopbrew, who are based out in Dolphin's Barn. It's their new Nova IPA, which is a new addition to their core range of beers, so available year round. You can't really have International Beer Day without an IPA. So the whole style, it originated back in the UK when they were shipping beer over to India and they needed to preserve it, but then made its way over to the States where they've sort of refined it. But it would be probably the most popular style of craft beer available.
Mm.
So this one in particular, it's more of an in-between of a West and East Coast style, I would say. Typically, West Coast are very bitter. East Coast sort of lighter on bitterness. They showcase more of the hops. I think that is where this one leans slightly, but it still has good bitterness. But the hop varieties they use, if you even just put your nose up to the glass, you'll get loads of orange and grapefruit, gooseberry, honeydew melon, stone fruit, that kind of thing. But then pillowy sort of malt, and then nice bitterness to keep it sort of clean and refreshing and not too bitter, not too sickly sweet or anything
like
that.
It must be hard though, there's so many IPAs to stand out or to even produce something that's different to all the other IPAs.
Yeah. So it is definitely quite saturated at the moment. But it is something where most breweries will have sort of three or four pale ales or hoppy IPAs that they have as their core range, and then they keep it fresh by doing limited edition brews, which you'll find in mostly in independent off licenses. There's hop breeding programs in the Southern Hemisphere and in the Yakima Chief Valley in the States and stuff like that. So there is constantly innovation happening of crossbreeding hops, and then there's new hop technologies with hop oils and stuff. This one itself keeps it classic. It's just, it's whole hops. It's Irish malt, a yeast strain that expresses fruity flavors, and then just good quality Irish water.
Yeah, I know, and it's lovely. And so is it, if you're going to, is it about hops now that they've almost like run out of ideas about how to brew an IPA in slightly different ways that they're, you know, they need to bring different hops
into
right now?
Yeah, I think it's kind of just, at the end of the day, you're constantly chasing innovation, and whether that be we want to make something that's more versatile and can be used to bitter and impart fruit flavor, or whether it's we need to make something that has more of a particular acid or flavor compound so we can use more of it and have more sustainable brewing in that way. But then again, like, there is also just the chase of flavor and doing crazy things just to see how it goes. I will say, though, like, we've kind of come a bit of a way from back in the day. There was the whole hop craze where it was bigger IPAs, more hops with every brew. But I do think people are starting to revert back to balance is where where the perfection is for the most part. I think Dopbrew, they've got a really nice range of lagers, IPAs, pale ales. Shane, the founder, he specializes in barrel aged beer as well. He's, I would say, the barrel master when it comes to barrel aged beer in Ireland, and he'll do crazy things from barrel aged lagers all the way to imperial strength barley wines aged in Riesling barrels and then into whiskey barrels and then into Scotch or mezcal.
It's hard, I understand it's hard to get barrels nowadays.
So a lot of them, usually that's like through a specific dealer in Germany is where a lot of them come from. But there is still a really broad availability of barrels.
Okay, yeah, that's absolutely lovely.
As a sunny day sipper.
Rory says that, I hear that Wicker Lad is an awful dose for straw man arguments. The jokes write themselves. Is Wicker Man an original idea or Wurzel Gummidge? Somebody else says, hi Moose and Booze, isn't it amazing how at the mention of the word Marvel my brain automatically severs connection to my ears until Sean moves on to the next topic. You can reconnect now because we'll move on to our second movie. It is Lady. Here's a clip.
Who is Lady Isabella?
Why did you pick me?
Well, you look so pretty.
Great. Come on, guys.
But if you leave, then who's going to film all of this?
Could you just lock the door? That's really creepy. Isabella, what's happened to you?
I can see through my hands!
Right, that was, I can see through my hands. Does she turn into a ghost?
She becomes invisible.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so yeah. Lady Isabella gets the nickname Invisibella at one point.
of course she does, yes.
Yeah. This is really great. So you heard there, Sian Clifford, as I said earlier, she's in Fleabag. She plays Lady Isabella Ravenhide. So if anyone... If you've seen Albert and David Maisel's legendary documentary, Grey Gardens, mm-hmm. Have you seen that?
No.
Okay, so it was about like Jackie Onassis Kennedy's cousins who lived in this mansion in East Hampton, but it was like dilapidated and they had to, like, people were trying to get them out of the house and they literally had like raccoons living in the wall. But Lady very much draws from that kind of like cinema verite style that they approach, where it's like fly on the wall. And they've just removed the raccoons and swapped them for ravens. Like there's just ravens kind of all over this lovely estate. So a small film crew come to the estate led by Sam, who's played by Laurie Knaston, who played Johnny Marr in like England Is Mine. He was also Hungry Paul in Leonard and Hungry Paul recently.
Oh, all right.
He is Sam and he's like this very insecure but classic, like the costume design in this film is brilliant because without him even having to open his mouth, you know he's like an amateur filmmaker. So he's coming, he is BAFTA nominated as comes up all the time, which is a bit of a reflection. I think it's the filmmaker Samuel Abrahams who made this. This is his feature debut. He was BAFTA nominated like 16 years ago for a short film he made. So he's kind of poking fun at himself. So Sam is here trying to make this documentary about Lady Isabella because she's a bit eccentric and just fascinating. Like she has outfits for every occasion on the estate. She also hosts this annual talent show for disadvantaged children called Stately Stars. And her mission this year is to win it.
Yes.
she will not, no child get in her way of it. But it's just like, it's so theatrical. And Sian Clifford is brilliant in this because like she is like very regal and very demure anyway, so there was times where I forgot that this was a mockumentary. Like she's so convincing, and Sam the whole time is freaked out by her, and she has told him that like Netflix have come along, like they're making this like documentary, they're paying the bills. Turns out that deal didn't really exist.
So this isn't on Netflix, just
so they continue to work together. The footage becomes just more outrageous. There's another character, Becky, played by Julia Cowan, who is her Lady Isabella's long suffering like lady, hand lady of the house. And as the two of them kind of get to spend more time together in this seclusion, like the ridiculousness of Lady Isabella becomes quite endearing because we learn a little bit of her like backstory of like her arrangements with like her marriage. She's not left the estate for 5 years, and we learn a bit about why that is. And as we heard there, she starts to become invisible. And she also is this like aspiring creative and artist. So she's like getting new outfits to like paint on the floor and like all this like lunacy aristocracy stuff to fill the time. But like she is so interesting and Sam is so insecure in his own voice as a filmmaker that you can see how much he's relying on her for this film because he has nothing to say otherwise. But she's not, because she's kind of locking herself away and people just see her as this like crazy person. They're not taking her seriously. And she feels that like, because she's also a lady in her like late 40s, 50, that she's disappearing because people feel like she doesn't have anything interesting to say.
Okay, there's a bit of an allegory going on here as well.
Yeah, but it's not like... It's not ham-fisted to you. It's done really funnily because she'll be like, my hands, I can't see them. And then she's like, my arms. And like all of her body then kind of becomes to disappear. She, you know, tells him to make good use of while he can still see certain areas while he can. So the relationship that they form throughout it is really lovely. And, you know, obviously, as you would expect, they bring out kind of the best in each other. They have found their voices and all this kind of stuff. I won't say what happens in Stately Stars. But I loved this. Like, the production design in this is incredible. Like, it also made me think of Saltburn, a film I really cannot stand.
Yeah.
Trash.
Yeah.
Of like how it tried to do satire of like the upper classes.
Yeah.
This is really good and it's very smart and clever. And the people, there's a better script and the people carry it much better because they're not as affected, even though the like Sian Clifford's performance is very big. The costumes are brilliant. Also kind of drawn from that Grey Gardens just extravagance of like she's seen literally no one except Becky and Sam, but she's still just like putting on a show with her outfits, which you're like, that's an extension, I guess, of her creativity too.
Yeah. Okay. I've never heard anyone describe Saltburn as trash. I wasn't a fan of it either, I must say. But yeah, I'm glad. That was very liberating to hear that. Well done.
Thank you.
As well as that. Right. And Lady is in cinemas.
Next week.
Cinemas from next week. Right. Finally. And this is kind of a good news because we hear so much about they're going to make a remake of this and a remake of that. There's something there is not going to be a remake of.
Yeah,
I know that's kind of a negative news story, but it had been reported that there was going to be an American Squid Games.
Yeah, there was lots of talk and rumours about this based on the Squid Game finale. Cate Blanchett turns up and it's kind of posited that she's maybe going to be like an American recruiter and that was going to be the setup for this American version that was supposed to be headed up by David Fincher. They kind of denied, I know the original creator of Squid Game kind of denied the connection. Cate Blanchett said she was like open to coming back if that was the case, but like David Fincher and Netflix were in the works for a while on this American version called Heckler, I think was the working title. But like basically when you think back on it, like Squid Game was huge because I think it was helped a lot because of COVID, although I will say I know people really loved that first season.
True. Yeah.
But I think it did also help that we had nothing to do but watch telly. And it was kind of this huge cultural moment. It was everywhere. You had the game show spin off, like there are so many references that kind of still carry through now. And then the latter seasons kind of really didn't make any noise.
Yeah.
So basically they're putting it down to, you know, this version has been years in development and there's been various executive changes and basically Netflix like don't really see this as a priority. And then also with David Fincher, he's moved on to other films. He's working on The Adventures of Cliff Booth, which is the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood follow up. So I think they're just kind of like, right, if we don't even have David Fincher, because obviously that's a good name to have to even like maybe revive a property like this. It's like, if we don't have Fincher, maybe we should just kind of like leave this for a while, because it's probably too close as well, you know, like you're probably better off maybe leaving some time and letting people forget that nobody really cared about the latter seasons and then coming back and going, remember this, remember how like good and satirical this was, well we're doing it again, you know. So
yeah, okay, well that's something we're not getting is probably a bit of good news for a change. That's our lot for today. Thanks to Fionnuala Jones, Zara Hedeman and James Donnelly.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.